It's time to tee it up with On the Tee, talking the wide world of golf from the PGA to the Champions Tour, LPGA, college, high school, and the crazy world of the Hack Nation. And here's your head of the Hack Nation and your host, Mike Rickard.
On the Tee, the newest addition to the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection radio network. We're streaming live on RadioSt.Pete.com, and we're on the Tan Talk family of stations forming our Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection radio network, and then, of course, Hoovy.TV, our streaming channel, and that thing just launched last week, and we're rocking and rolling on this March 12, 2022. On this rainy, I'm looking outside. I'm actually inside Ferg Sports Bar and Grill. I'm Mike Rickard, host of head of the Hack Nation, and the host. We'll talk about the world of golf. It touches the pros and the schmoes who love the great game of golf. I'll have pros join me, thank God, from all over the country in the great state of Florida. In fact, I've got that covered today with John Rieger coming on about 11:30. This gentleman is the encyclopedia of the world of golf. Internationally, nationally, and of course, right here in the Sunshine State. I'm blessed to have John Rieger join me about 11:30. We'll talk the entire world of golf, and we'll talk our Florida Sports Hall of Fame event that's taking place in 2 weeks, actually, from last night, and we'll talk about that a little bit. Barry Smith will be on in the next show, the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network, to talk about that event, and we'll let John provide you the high-profile cigars, and we'll just leave it at that in baseball. Going to be a great conversation with him. Our second guest is Colette Glover Hanna. What an exceptional young lady she is. The Women of Color Golf Foundation. She's a big part of that with Clemmie Perry, and we're going to talk about her career and her contributions to the community. And as I said, we are at Ferg Sports Bar and Grill, about 375 yards of Tropicana Field to the parking lot. I'd probably hit my 13 wood, get about 250 yards a roll, and I'd be right up there by the ticket window. And that's how my game rolls, and I actually showcase my pathetic hacks. I tell everybody I'm a hack, and if you ever want some video, I'm going to start putting some of it out on my Hoovy.TV under On the Tee, because my buddy Kenny and I, we went to a par 3 yesterday, of course, appropriate for us hacks. Had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs. And I'll share that story a little bit later on. We're here from 11 to 12, as I said, from Ferg's. And one of the things, you know, we're going to talk PGA. We're going to talk LPGA, Champions Tour, the high school, the collegiate golf in the Sunshine State. Coming from the Midwest, I didn't realize, and I think most of the golf world does, this is the mecca of golf. So why not launch On the Tee? I had this show in the Midwest for 15 years, was a resounding success, despite the host. It was two pros and a hack, and we had a lot of fun. And we're going to have just as much fun, if not more. And that's why I'm ecstatic about bringing a John Rieger into the conversation, because he's that kind of cat. He's going to have a stogie in, but he's a scratch golfer. So we can share a lot of stories. And then the hack humor is going to spill over. We're going to have a lot of interactive opportunities for you to come down here to Ferg's, get some swag, some gear. We're going to do... we'll do Happy Gilmore trivia. We'll do Tin Cup. So if you're not a big golf fan, but you've watched great goofy movies like me, this is the place to stay on Saturdays from 11 to 12 in the future. We're going to do a lot of interactive enjoyment for everybody. As I mentioned, it was a success up north, and we'll continue to do that. And we're reaching out to all the pros. If you have a story, by the way, if you have a story out there that you want to tell that's humorous or an interaction you had, just email me at mrickardonthetee@gmail.com. And On the Tee, as I said, is streaming live. Let's reach out to our and address and thank our radio affiliates. That's WTAN 106.1 FM, AM 1340, Tampa Clearwater, St. Pete, WZHR FM 104.3 FM, WDCF AM 1350, Zephyr Hills, and WZHR 102.3 FM, AM 1400. And I thought I was going to be talking a lot about the leaderboard. I was going to bring John into the conversation. We were going to break down the players, the fifth major, if you will, one of my favorite events. And one of my favorite events as a hack is seeing these poor – these are professionals, the world's best. And they get a number 17. Everything tightens up if you catch my drift. And I felt so bad. Well, you're going to see a lot of it in the next few days. If you're not, if you haven't been staying on top of it, play has been suspended. They didn't even get the entire first round in, and it looks like it's going to be a Monday finish. And so extra viewing for guys like me on a Monday on the Golf Channel, looking forward to that. However, it's sad for what's taking place in Ponte Vedra, because that's such an exceptional event in this storm that we're getting the just a tail end of it in Pinellas County will actually hit them again today, and you won't see. Tommy Fleetwood's on top of it. He's a leader. There's a handful of guys in the clubhouse at six under, but Harold Varner, back to that poor dude, he had a two-stroke lead as he approaches the island hole. If you've seen it on SportsCenter a million times, they love to see these pros go into the drink, and unfortunately, Harold Varner, right after a nice birdie, and he's looking solid, goes in and ends up with a double bogey on 17. You'll see a lot of that, and this weather is going to be the highlight the next couple of days, unfortunately. Hey, and some news, as I mentioned, and I'm proud of the great state of Iowa. Zach Johnson, if you missed it, from Cedar Rapids, Iowa, Drake University. I've known Zach for quite some time. Is our Ryder Cup captain, and deservedly so. He's had a nice record on the Ryder Cup. He also had a superb record on the President's Cup, and he's a great human being. He's 49 years young. The young guys love him. The older guys respect him, and I think that's extremely cool. I'll mention this topic, but I want to discuss most of this with John Rieger when we get him on, and that is the ceremony, the World Golf Hall of Fame induction, Tiger Woods, and I just thought that was so cool. He actually, you know, as one of the Golf Channel guys said, you can see some emotion in him as he's gotten older, and appreciation. And his young daughter, Samantha, actually is the one that provided him with the introduction to the audience. And he told some great stories about his youth, and I thought that was superb as well. Let's see. Oh, Valspar next week. I mean, in the great state of Florida, you don't realize how fortunate you are. You had the Honda. Of course, you had the Players. You had the Arnold Palmer. And then right here on the West Coast, we get the pleasure of having the Valspar. And I just saw an announcement. 21 of the world's top 50 will be at Valspar next week. And I'll be sending up a correspondent to call in next week. And looking forward to that. And let's see, what else did I have to blabber about while I'm reaching out to this young lady, Colette Glover Hannah?
Good morning.
Good morning, dear. How are you? Welcome to On the Tee. It's certainly an honor to have someone as accomplished as you to help this schmo on this end carry me through the first segment of the show. This is only our second On the Tee, so you're breaking ground there, dear. You're my first. Oh, no, you're my second female guest.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you.
So let's talk about your and I love this concept, and you can explain it to my audience. Hannah's Shoebox, that is your baby. You of course are involved in the Women of Color Foundation golfers, and I think were you guys up at the event on Monday with the NFL?
On Monday?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I personally wasn't, but there could have been some other people there.
Yeah, I thought I'd seen them. But anyway, Clemmie Perry, of course, making the introduction to us, and she said that you had a superb resume. And as I read it this morning, I was like, holy moly. Why don't you share with our audience what Hannah's Shoebox is? Because I think there's a lot of people out there that could certainly assist you in this passion.
Oh, thank you. Well, thank you for the opportunity. So Hannah's Shoebox is an online shoe store that I started a few years ago. We're headquartered here in the Tampa Bay area with customers throughout the United States and Canada. So we started the store because my own daughter, her shoe size matched her age from the time she was six up until she was 11 years old. And for those who are parents of what we call tween girls, there's an absolute challenge in finding age-appropriate shoes for those girls. Now, you can find shoes that fit them, but they, most times they're going to be shoes that you wouldn't want your 8, 9, or 10-year-old to wear because they're in a size 8, 9, 10 women's shoe. So we make sure that the shoes are appropriate for the girls who just happen to have larger size feet. Our shoe sizes are sizes 6 to 11, and making sure, again, that the girls look like girls.
Give them that feminine, because, and my daughter, who is 27, she's a professional in Chicago, she had the same issue. In fact, her feet, and we're close, they were as big as the old man's, but I'm a shrimp. And so, her mother and I, we always had that challenge. But and even when she was in dance, she was the largest girl in dance, and it was difficult to find, appropriate size for her.
Yeah, it is a real challenge for a lot of families. So we like to make sure that people understand that Hannah Shoebox is a one-stop solution for girls who just happen to wear women's size shoes. So we're strictly e-commerce, only online at hannahsshoebox.com.
All right. Well, that's just one thing you've done. And of course, you've got a superb background with two degrees, and you've been involved in the small business environment for a good majority of your professional career. Talk about some of the other things you accomplished. Now, then I'll start asking the hard questions, like, what's your golf game like?
So I'm a native of Tampa Bay, born and raised here, went away to college, got my first degree at Florida A&M University in journalism and public relations, came back here, worked at the University of South Florida, earned a master's degree in education, and eventually became an associate vice president at University of South Florida. So did that for a few years, decided to become a consultant. Then I started doing consulting on board development, community engagement, community relations. And was doing that actually when I started Hannah Shoebox. Again, that was just born out of an idea, and I was frustrated with my own experience of finding shoes for my daughter. So that's how I started that company while I was doing the consulting business. So that's it in a 30-second or less track.
Well, and Clemmie Perrin, of course, you've got the Women of Color Golf Foundation. How did you get involved in that event? And share with the audience what the mission statement is there. And one other question, in the world of golf, was it tough to find golf shoes for young ladies?
Well, actually, it wasn't that bad because we haven't necessarily gotten into athletic shoes for the girls. All of our shoes are just, we do a lot of just everyday wear, special events and things like that for Hannah Shoebox. So it wasn't really, it's not hard because you can always find a Nike, Adidas or whatever, Reebok golf shoe in adult sizes for women. But I got involved with Women of Color Golf, which I absolutely love, when I had lunch with Clemmie Perrin in February. And I was familiar with Clemmie because her mom is just amazing. A former school board member, has a school named after her. So I always admired her mom. And I knew Clemmie from afar because she would be with her mom often. And so we said hi to each other, but we really didn't know each other. So we had lunch because we had a mutual friend who suggested that we get together. So we had lunch in February. She told me about Women of Color Golf, and she encouraged me to learn to play. And at that point, I had always wanted to learn to play golf because of I knew of the benefits from a business perspective, but I didn't have an opportunity to learn to play. I didn't even know where to start. So when she mentioned it to me, and I thought, oh, this would be perfect for me to learn to play. And so I took advantage of her clinic that she did in a partnership with Top Golf. So we did, I think, a six-week session there for the first session of her clinic. And then I did the second session as well. The funny thing is she kept saying in February, once I learned to play, she kept saying, oh, you'll be playing by fall. And I had no concept of it. And I kept thinking, I don't know what she sees, but she saw something and said that I would be able to play. So I kept with it. And then, so February came, and then by March was Valspar. So at Valspar, interestingly, this person who had only been playing picked up clubs. Let me not even say play, had picked up clubs 6 weeks prior, got to see Tiger Woods up close and personal because that was his first tournament back after the surgery. So that was exciting.
That was fortunate at that time, very fortunate, because at the last second he made a decision to come to Valspar, and I know everybody there was ecstatic, including you.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And when I say up and close, we were right there. I got to see him on a couple holes. So that worked out extremely well. And then, and Clemmie's been around for a while, and she's gotten a lot of press, but at that time, there was some interest from the local newspapers, so we were on the front cover of the Tampa Tribune, at the time it was still the Tampa Tribune. We got mentioned in some, I just looked at something the other day where there was a post that I put on social media that was picked up on African Golf Digest. So all of these things were happening within months of picking up clubs for the very first time.
You were the lady hack in my world, but you've blown right by me. Now you're in the big leagues.
No. So, you know, and all of this is because of the great job that Clemmie was doing or is doing and the attention that Women of Color Golf was garnering. So then the opportunity came in the fall for Clemmie to join the great Renee Powell, second African-American woman on the LPGA Tour, who was just recognized the other night with the Charlie Shiffler Award at the World Golf
Inductions
Awards.
And she was superb. That was very impressive.
Mm-hmm. So Renee was honored at St. Andrews in Scotland. And she had the opportunity to take seven people with her. So Clemmie, of course, was the leader of that seven. And I was invited to go to accompany Clemmie and represent Women of Color Golf in Scotland. So, of course, while we were there, we got to play a round of golf.
And how'd that go for a novice? Because those tracks, those golf courses are, they date back centuries. And they're not very forgiving for as hacks, but if you hit it right down the middle and straight, you can be successful.
Well, I did sometimes, but it was horrible in terms of the score. but here's the beauty of it. The beauty was this, you know, woman who has been recognized as the second African American on the LPGA Tour over in Scotland, and here I am again, just picked up clubs, you know, less than a year, and I'm already over in Scotland, the birthplace of golf, honoring and you know, accompanying this great woman. And so all of that attributed to Women of Color Golf and its mission, which we talked about briefly, which is to grow the game of golf for women of color. Because historically, we have been denied access to the sport, not just as a gender, but of course as an ethnicity or a race that
Precisely.
We were not able to play. So to take advantage of that now, and so why I do it and why it's so important to me is that I understand the benefits of it. I understand that it's the networking opportunities that I get. I understand the health component of it. I understand, and here's an interesting fact. I have now been playing for 4 years, and I can tell you that I have ran into other African-American women on the golf course twice. Only twice has this happened. And it only happened twice because there's so few of us. And so that's why Women of Color Golf is just so instrumental to growing the game for women who, again, who traditionally, historically, have not had access.
Well, from a leadership perspective, they couldn't ask for better ladies and role models than you. Excuse me. As I talked to Colette Glover Hannah, and you were the Woman of Color Golf Member of the Year. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Yes, I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
It's such an honor. Well, thank you. One of the things that the honor is given to people who represent the organization in different capacities. And Clemmie often asked me to come and speak to the classes about the benefits of golf. And I basically tell them the same thing that I just told you. But this is so meaningful because I am so committed to the mission of making sure that other women become a part of this organization and learn to play. So it's funny because when I first learned to play, I was just so excited about the experience, and I started talking to any woman, particularly women of color, and first thing I would say is, do you play golf? And if they tell me no, then the second question would be, do you want to play? And if they told me yes, then of course I would, turn them over to Clemmie and they would go through the clinic. But if they told me that they thought about it or they were thinking about it, then I would just talk about the benefits. Case in point, I had a good friend through the chamber, Tampa Chamber of Commerce, where I serve on the board of directors there. And she represents a bank on the board. She's a VP. And so she was talking about how her counterpart was getting a lot of FaceTime with the president of the bank. And he was getting a lot of FaceTime because he plays golf with the president. And so her concern was who was going to be in line for the next project, the next promotion, the next whatever. And so I told her, I said, well, why don't you learn to play golf? And then he won't have that as an excuse to not be included in that FaceTime with the president. So if he's inviting one, he has to invite you.
I always felt that might be an advantage for me in the world of golf. And unfortunately, given the horrendous state of my game, I finally broke through that barrier. I thought, what the hell? If nothing else, I'm going to give this guy the smile and the laughter he needs to relax out here on the course. If I stick with golf etiquette, and I'm not obnoxious, and that actually was a recipe for success for me in the Midwest for years as I tried to get clients to buy advertising. Let's go back to your statement about you only run into just a handful of ladies of color on the course. Do you think that factor is, because I was very involved in the first tee up north, do you think it's the economic restrictions? Because that's one of the challenges of the game of golf is the price to pay, the price you pay to play, actually.
That's certainly a contributor. I would say it is number one, but it's not the only thing. I think it's also people can't be what they don't see. So you don't see a lot of people of color, particularly women of color, even if you watch golf on television. So if I don't see myself, I don't know that I could be that person, right? Okay, with the WNBA, again, talking about little black girls who could be potential LPGA members, I see softball players, who have African-American women playing. I certainly see them in the WNBA. I see them on tennis with Serena Williams.
Hey, to interrupt, did you see the movie yet, King Richard?
I did. I absolutely
Isn't that excellent?
I think Richard Williams is brilliant. He's a genius. But so I think the economics of it is the first thing, because golf is not cheap. But I also think that exposure, the lack of exposure of black women in golf on the LPGA level, is also another reason why you don't see a lot of little black girls playing. So another thing, just to take it back to women of color golf, they have adopted the Doris Reddick Elementary in Waimama, where they are teaching girls of color to play golf in elementary school. So exposure is key. Exposure is critical to what they could potentially do later in life.
Colette, you know what they really need? Is they need an Earl Woods, or they need a Richard Williams to take, their children under their wing, and just be that persistent. And it sounds like that's a portion of your platform is to be that organization to lead the charge, so these young ladies can at least explore whether they want to play this game or not.
Absolutely. And that's the thing, again, going back to exposure, they have to be exposed to the game. I am a big fan of teaching young girls to play because I know the potential for scholarships, right? If they learn to play, they can go to college on a college scholarship. And a lot of those scholarships go unused, particularly at historically black colleges and universities, because they don't have enough talent in the pool to bring to those institutions.
Wait, without a
shadow. Yeah, grow them.
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. We know those dollars are out there, whether they're minority funds or athletic department funds. And I've explored this, you know, many times for kids, trying to find them an opportunity, whatever the sport was, track and field, you know, the mainstream sports. But that's a very good point about golf. Okay, now let's fast forward to next week. Are you going to be up there at Valspar involved with Clemmie and the girls?
I will absolutely be there. On Tuesday, I will be joining her for lunch at the Women's Symposium to kick Valspar off. But I look forward to it. It's always a great opportunity to see some great golf, number one. And then, two, to do some networking with some other women who love the sport.
Do you need somebody to drive you up there maybe and I could park the car and then sneak in? That's about the only way I'm getting into an event like that. You know, I got a coattail on you powerful ladies.
Well, yeah. Well, talk to Clemmie about that. I'm sure she'll make it happen.
Yeah. All right. I had a couple other all right. So, 4 years into the great game of golf, how would you grade, and typically it sounds like as a business professional that pushes yourself, you probably give yourself a very tough grade, but how would you grade your golf game? For a novice, essentially, 4 years.
Are we on a typical grading scale?
Yeah. Let's go. Like we're in school.
Okay, I will probably give my game on a good day. I'm gonna say I would give myself a B because Lord knows there's room for improvement. But
that's fabulous.
I'm doing pretty good considering that, again, I just learned to play 4 years ago. I don't play nearly as much as I want to. I just don't, you know, as a lot of people, life gets busy, and especially as an entrepreneur. But, you know, when I'm out there, I can do pretty good.
All right. Well, maybe one of these days we'll all get out there. I'll provide a few laughs, and you guys provide a few tips. How about that, Colette?
Let's do it.
All right. Thanks for joining me here on the tee. Tell Clemmie I said hello, and we'll all get together. I'll have you girls come down to Ferg Sports Bar and Grill sometime. We'll have some fun before a baseball game.
Oh, we would love to do that. Definitely. We'll take you up on it.
All right. Have a great weekend, and enjoy your week next week at the Valspar.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
You betcha.
All right. Have a good day.
Thank you very much. You have an open invitation. I don't care if I have to tell Mark to make breakfast. If you want to come down here to Ferg's or before a ball game, I'll get you tickets to a ball game and we'll go across the street.
Yeah, and how about baseball coming back? That's fantastic. So I'm sure everybody at Ferg's is really excited about that.
Excited? I discovered it. I was doing something online and it popped up and I got a hold of Mark Ferguson. And I can't say on the air what he said, but it certainly worked out because April 7th is opening day across the country. And April 8th was going to be opening day here anyway against Orioles. So everything works out. All right, let's
Well, you know, we are going to talk about baseball, even though this is a golf show. But, you know, there's so much intertwining of baseball players and golfers anyway. But we have a special event coming up here from the Florida Sports Hall of Fame and the Tampa Baseball Museum. You know, the Florida Sports Hall of Fame, you know, we've been established from 1961 actually by a group of sports writers. And we have a class that we induct every year and some of Florida's greatest athletes. And what we do with those athletes is we get them to tell their story and be a role model and use their collective celebrity to, you know, promote fitness awareness, education, and sports activities amongst youth and adults. So that's what they do. And the Tampa Baseball Museum was pretty cool. If you're in the Tampa Bay area, you may remember when the Florida DOT was going to knock down Al Lopez's house, the famous Al Lopez. And they all worked together, and they created a special way to move that thing a mile and a half down the road into a special district in Ybor City. Now the Tampa Bay Baseball Museum's in the Al Lopez house in that Ybor State Park. So it's all come together. So we decided, both organizations, since a lot of folks in their Hall of Fame and the Tampa Baseball Hall of Fame are also in our Florida Sports Hall of Fame, we decided to have a special event called Baseball, Bourbon, and Cigars. And we've got Wade Boggs and Lou Piniella and about a dozen other Major League Baseball alumni there. And we're going to try to raise some money for charity, and it's going to be on Friday, March 25th at 6:30 to 9:30, and it's at the Garden of the Ybor City Museum State Park. So if you go to the websites of both the Tampa Bay Museum and the Florida Sports Hall of Fame, just type the names into your browser. It'll take you right to their websites, and you'll see all about both organizations. And you also can buy tickets. So it's, you know, the average person can go. It's not just an elite thing where, you know, you have to be a major title sponsor to go. You can buy tickets. You can buy a ticket for $100. And that's if you buy two at the same time. We call that the double play. But what you get for that is you get a commemorative dugout mug, which is pretty cool. If anybody's ever seen those out there that's listening in, but it's a mug that it looks like a baseball bat. It's pretty cool.
I met
J.C. Newman Cigar Company. They're one of our sponsors, and you get a cigar, and we have this tremendous raffle. Just imagine some of the memorabilia and stuff these players are going to bring with, and you know, try to buy a raffle ticket and win. And of course, you get a free ticket in the museum too. So that's what's really important. So, you know, we have three key sponsors here that's making it all happen for us: Bayfront Health, St. Petersburg; Pilar Rum from Key West, Pilar. We actually have to pronounce that correctly, and Yuengling. Those are our three sponsors, and again, we're doing it in conjunction with the Florida Sports Hall of Fame and the Tampa Baseball Museum. When you go to the Florida Sports Hall of Fame website, or you just visit social media out there, the Florida Sports Hall of Fame social media, and even your own baseball show media, you'll see a scan, a QR code. That seems to be the way to enter things nowadays, so you'll see a QR code on our flyers and things like that. All you have to do is scan it, and it'll allow you to buy tickets. So That's what it's about, baseball, bourbon, cigar. What a great combination in Ybor City on the 25th of March.
Doesn't get any better than that, John. You know, and being across from Tropicana Field, I got involved with the Ted Williams Foundation and Dave McCarthy and the boys. And, you know, a couple of people came over and we had conversations on baseball. I didn't realize, coming from the Midwest, that just the area of Tampa in the suburbs, there's been 89 professionals in the bigs from just Tampa. Is that an amazing number?
Yeah, Tampa has a long history of baseball and famous baseball players, but also youth baseball in the Tampa Bay area is huge, and that's why you have such a plethora of baseball players in that Tampa Baseball Hall of Fame and the Florida Sports Hall of Fame. They're, you know, you just got a ton of kids playing baseball.
Well, you've got the high schools and the major universities, but Eckerd College and the Sunshine League and Tampa.
This goes way back like that. You know, the spring training in Tampa started in 1913. So 1913 is when they actually had spring training in baseball way back then, which is pretty cool.
Well, I live in Treasure Island, and that's where the Yankees, in that area, that's where they used to live. They stayed right about two blocks from where we're at. And
another cool thing about Tampa baseball, since this is Cigar City, as they call it, and the rich heritage of Ybor City and the history of cigars there, I found out that the first minor league team in Tampa in 1919 was called the Tampa Smokers. So what a name.
I like
and
that name.
They would actually, and, you know, they actually played another team called the Havana Cubans. So, you know, what a
those are classic cool names.
They keep renaming all our sports teams and this and that and the other. So, you know, this is flavor. This is history. This is rich history. So, you know, if you went to the Tampa Bay Museum, you'd be able to see all this and the displays and all the things about the history of sports. And that's part of what the Florida Sports Hall of Fame does also. We're about the history. And so we want people, young people especially, to look back at the history. A lot of times our younger folks, our youth, they don't study history at all when it comes to sports at all. I mean, they can't think, you know, if you're a young golfer, you probably, think of Tiger Woods. You're not thinking of Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, or Bobby Jones. You're thinking, you know, of who's the latest and greatest golfer out there. So this really helps across the board in all sports, especially with baseball and golf, to have these museums and be able to have the ability for young people to learn.
You're listening to On the Tee here on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection Radio Network conversation with John Rieger. Of course, he's a playing professional. Now, you've got your tentacles and everything in this area. I figured that out in the short
well,
5 days I've known
in
you.
In the golf business, to do well in the golf business, you have to have six jobs. So that's why I do a little bit of everything. It all adds up.
Well, you've done it all superbly. Let's talk a little bit about your career in golf and when you decided to migrate to pursue that and the passion that it is versus any other sport.
Well, you know, my dad, he's deceased now, but he was an NFL All-Pro linebacker. He played 12 years in the NFL. He was an All-Pro with the Pittsburgh Steelers in the early 60s. And he played 9 years for the Steelers and three at the Redskins. And he's also the founder of the NFL Players Association. He was one of the several active players at that time in 1959 that set up their union so they could have a pension. So it's certainly that organization's come a long way. But my dad always loved the game of golf. And he never pushed me in any particular direction. You know, of course, as a kid, your dad's an all-pro linebacker. You want to grow up and be just like him and play football. And so I had a little stint in football in high school and realized I came home one day and I said, Dad, you know, I don't really want to play football. I just want to play golf. And he was a man of few words at that time, and he would go, good. And that was about it, and I was off to the races.
That's his blessing?
Yeah, I got his blessing to play golf, and so he loved the game, and of course that's how you take up the game of golf and become a PGA golf professional is you have to love the game of golf and everything about it. And in this country, you know, there's about 20 some million golfers out there, and you think, well, that's not many. That might only be, you know, gosh, you know, 8, 10, 12% of the population. But you know, in golf, there's 90 million people in the country, and this has been surveyed through the We Are Golf Organization, which is a collection of groups from the PGA of America to the PGA Tour, LPGA, on and on and on, every major golf organization in the United States. And they did surveys, and they found out that there's almost 100 million people in this country love the game of golf. They like the game of golf. They like watching it on television. They like, you know, they love the sport itself because golf is a game where you basically have to be your own referee. You know, you have to play by the rules, but you're your own referee. It's only you and your clubs and the golf ball trying to get in the hole as few strokes possible. So it's a very self-sustaining sport, especially for young people. Teaches them sportsmanship, teaches them character, teaches them a lot of the life values that you can through a sport. And you can see other sports out there like football and baseball and things like that. They're very reliant on officials, and sometimes in football, and I don't fault football for this, but sometimes in football you want to get away with a penalty so you can win the game. But in golf, you don't want to get away with a penalty because you know that it wouldn't be right for you to win if you cheated. So that's one of the cool things. So as a young person, hey, I loved it. Just that's why I wanted to be involved with this game, because it was just me. It was up to me. It wasn't up to anybody else, meaning that, you know, I love team sports, and team sports build a lot of character and things like that. But I knew on the golf course, if I messed up, it's me. And if I won, it's me. Not having to worry about a teammate dropping the ball or getting a penalty and those kind of things.
You know, I kind of went some same direction as your father. I had two sons, and I think I played my first round of golf in a business environment about 40, and I was humiliated and I was upset because I thought I was a pretty decent athlete, and I swore my boys were going to play the game of golf. And from the time my oldest, Michael, came out of the womb practically, I handed the club to him. Unfortunately, he took it and ran and had a nice high school career and played Division II collegiately. And I encourage anybody, any parents, at least give them that opportunity to see if it's a game that they would like to explore, because as you're well aware, John, it's a lifelong sport.
Well, it is a game of a lifetime, and you can take it up at any age. And that's what the beauty of it is. And it's the kind of sport also, it tends to favor a lot of older people that, you know, that they blew their knee out trying to play football, or might be a young lady that, you know, her elbow just kind of gave out from trying to play volleyball, you know, when they were young. And so now it's a game that not only can you take up as you're an older person, and when I say older, I'm talking about 30. I'm not talking about, you know, you have to wait till you're 75 years old, move to the villages. No, you can, you know, you can take this game up anyway. But what the most wonderful thing about it is this is a game that you can play with your family. And it could be you and your dad could be that 75-year-old, or it could be you and your wife and your young kids. Or it could be with your aunt or your brother or whatever. So even the PGA of America, they have a tournament. We can talk about this another time, called the PGA Family Cup, where you can get family members together and compete in a scramble and have a good time. So that's what it's all about. And golf is such, though, for your listeners, is that even if you don't play golf, I bet you can putt. Or you've probably been to a putt-putt course. And sometimes if you want to go with your friends out there on the golf course, ride along the cart with your putter and hit a few putts. Maybe that'll give you the confidence and the inspiration to actually go find a PGA golf professional somewhere at a golf course and take a few lessons and get some clubs and maybe join a beginning golf league and go have some fun and make new friends.
Well, many a four-person best shot, I can assure you, I'm that guy. I don't even get out of the cart till we get to the green. Let's talk about, I had a question relative to what's taking place right now at the Players and your years of managing and hosting tournaments and putting them on. I mean, this has just got to be such a challenge for these guys. Looks like 1 o'clock or noon today, they're going to try to resume round one. But it's just an absolute logistical nightmare behind the scenes, isn't it?
Well, it is. It's not so much for the organization of when to play and when not to play. You know, the players are very used to it, and the PGA Tour rules officials, you know, they have definite rules on, you know, when it's dangerous to play, not to play, and all that kind of stuff. They know how much time it takes to warm up. The hardest part about that, and this is the most unpredictable part, is the golf course maintenance. The superintendent and the golf course crews that have to get the golf course in shape to be playable. If the golf course is too wet and there's standing water out there, they have to either pump it off, squeegee it off the greens, try to get the golf course playable. And, you know, a lot of times it takes machinery. If the golf course is wet, you got to be careful not to all of a sudden put ruts in the fairways and that kind of thing. The other thing, it could be a little chaotic when it comes to this, is the spectators themselves. Because normally at a PGA Tour event, especially the players, just like any others, there's courtesy cars all over the golf course. And when the siren blows, they can come in a courtesy car, and they can go into the clubhouse, and caddies can go into the caddy area, and everybody's covered and safe. But the spectators, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 people out there, you know, there's not enough cover for them. You know, you either go back to the car, or you or you go and, you know, if you're fortunate enough, go to a hospitality suite or something like that. But generally, you're just going to get wet. And sometimes, you know, the galleries don't understand that, hey, if there's lightning out there, don't go stand under a tree to get under the rain. That's probably the worst place you can go. So sometimes you're better off just trying to go to different shelters or hospitality or what have you. So, but it is, it's a start and stop. This one especially, it's been raining since the tournament started on Thursday, but now I understand right now they are going to start at 1 o'clock and it's going to be beautiful weather, going to be windy. So that'll make that golf course play tough. So what will happen is right now the golf course is soft because of all the moisture. But what will happen as the tournament goes on, they'll probably have to do 36 holes in one day. I'm not sure how they're going to do that because I don't think they've even finished the first round.
No, they have not.
So they'll have to do 36 or try. They may play today, try to play as much holes as they can, play 36 tomorrow. They probably will have a Monday finish. But the tournament from today, where the golf course is soft, now through Monday, if they play on Monday, if that's, you know, whatever the schedule turns out to be, that golf course is going to be hard and dry and fast because of all the wind and the sun and drying everything out. So it'll be a totally different golf course Monday than it would be today. That's the chaotic part about it, I think, that, you know, you want to look at when you start talking about all these rain delays.
I think 66 of the 144 guys got their first round in, and that's a small number. Now you've really got a lot of management from that perspective. Hate to put you on the schneid, but who do you like in this tournament?
Everybody right now. You can't really tell you can always look at the early leaders and try to figure out, well, they might be a favorite. But this golf course, because there hasn't been 36 holes played yet, you don't really know. You have players that haven't even finished yet. So when I look at it, it's a wide open thing. I think the best way to look at it, if you're going to try to pick somebody, it's called horses for courses. You want to have golfers that it might suit their games better, like Colin Morikawa. He's a very accurate player off the tee and with his irons and things like that. You know, you look at a Bryson DeChambeau, he gets a little wild off the tee, that might hurt him there. So this particular tournament, it's so unusual that it does favor certain types of golfers, but that doesn't mean those certain type of golfers actually win every year either. And, you know, we've had Phil Mickelson win this thing before. He was pretty wild off the tee, but he won it. And so it's just a matter of you got to get 36 holes in to try to figure out who would be the favorite at this point.
Well, number 17, just from an entertainment perspective for the guy sitting at home that's, you know, a hack or maybe doesn't go out but just likes to see, you know, people's demise. How many have you played? I'm sure you've played over there. How's your success been on number 17, the island hole, the water hole?
Well, you know, I have a story about that. There was a young man at the time, his name was Brian Clare, and he actually runs the Champions Tour now. But he was my assistant golf pro. And I'd let him off on Sunday, Monday, Tuesdays to go play in the mini tours. About $60,000 later, 2 months later, he went and quit his job and went to PGA Tour qualifying. And he got on the tour. He's a 1987 Rookie of the Year.
Bravo!
Well, he played in, you know, he played the Players Championship numerous times. He was on the tour for about 15 years. Well, he made a hole in one on 17 one year.
Oh my God! Memory for a lifetime.
In the tournament, and there's only been about eight or nine of them. In fact, we went to the World Golf Hall of Fame this past summer with some folks and some friends, and there he was. They have a special exhibit of the 17th hole at TPC, and there he is. And so every year they always play all eight hole-in-ones that are made, and he gets his moment of glory in that. So he's infamous for making a hole-in-one at the Players' Championship. I used to work with him before the PGA Tour, and talking to the general manager and director of golf there, they're telling me, it's an unbelievable number of golf balls that the tourists and the people staying at the hotel and the golfers hit into that water. They said they retrieve like almost 100,000 golf balls a year out of the pond there.
Well, I would certainly empty my bag. I'm certain of that fact.
One year, my Golf Digest had a Worst Golfer of the Year contest. They took the two worst golfers they could find.
Where was I?
And this was, yeah, this, so it was funny because the guy who won, I mean, they shot in the 200s on that golf course. It took them all day. Well, the guy who won figured out instead of hitting it over the water, which was impossible for them, he putted it around. He putted it around the hole and up the walkway up to that island green. And, you know, so I think he made a 17 on that hole, which it secured the title for him where he could beat the other guy.
I could easily have won that. 17? I'm thinking I'm in the 20s on that hole, my friend. I felt so sorry for Harold Varner the other day, but we're going to watch a lot of guys that we feel for by the time this is said and done on Monday.
Well, you know, that 17th hole, too, when they first had the Players' Championship there, first time, I believe you had a couple tour players that actually fell in the water because they were backing up to line up their putt, and they didn't really realize the water was there, and they miscast, and they fell in the water. So, you know, I won't name their names because they just want to live this down, though. They don't want anybody to know, but it's hilarious.
Hey, let's do another plug for special golf report edition, of course, baseball, bourbon, and cigars. Let's do a little plug before that before I wind down, and I'm looking forward to your contributions frequently, my friend. I'll pull you out of retirement.
Hey, so let's talk about the baseball, bourbon, and cigars. It's Friday, March 25th. It goes from 6:30 p.m. to 9:30 p.m. at the Garden of the Ybor City Museum State Park. That's where the museum is and the Al Lopez House. And a single ticket's $150, but if you buy two tickets, they're $200 total. We call that the double play. There's also reserved tables up to 8 guests for $2,000. You can purchase your tickets right at the Florida Sports Hall of Fame website. And again, we have Wade Boggs and Lou Piniella and about a dozen other Major League Baseball alumni that have committed to come and sign autographs. And the evening's going to be fun because there's going to be like a fireside chat where we're going to be, you know, talking to the players and they can tell stories and they're going to be able to mingle in with everybody. And again, we have to thank our sponsors for it, which is Bayfront Health St. Petersburg, Pilar Rum from Key West. So the Florida Sports Hall of Fame Tampa Baseball Museum teaming up on Friday, March 25th. Please visit the Florida Sports Hall of Fame website and you'll learn more and you can scan your code and buy some tickets and go on down and have a bourbon, have a cigar, and mingle with some of the greats in Major League Baseball.
Well, it's a pleasure to talk to one of the greats in the state of Florida for your golf expertise. And, John, I'm looking forward to continued conversations. And Barry and I will have a little fun in the next hour. And have a great weekend, my man. And
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
I appreciate
Take care.
It very much. All right. John Rieger, and I tell you what, I'm looking forward to continued conversations with that guy. We just scratched the surface. His resume is unbelievable. Playing professional, radio broadcaster, teacher, director of golf, many golf business partners, golf manufacturer, college golf coach, golf shop merchandiser. I mean, yada, yada. I could go on and on and on. That's the career that John Rieger, who's kind enough to join on the tee, and I think I'm going to be able to pull him out of retirement from time to time to raise the bar on this production. And this time went fast. I'll tell you what, I really like the story of Colette Glover Hanna and, of course, the Women of Color Golf Foundation and what they're doing. Valspar is this weekend. And they'll be up there, Clemmy Perry and her army of ladies, as they try to spread the word on the opportunities to play the great game of golf. And I didn't get a chance to share my humor yesterday with my buddy Kenny in front of me, but I'll just save that for another day. And we're going to shoot video next time of his wonderful play. That's a par 3. The longest hole is 110, and I don't think either one of us were in the 40s. That's if we would have kept score. From the Ferg Sports Bar Clubhouse, I'm Mike Rickard. For Colette Glover Hanna, John Rieger, Joe Boudreau, and Big Ed on the controls, thank you for listening as we look forward to sharing the great game of golf with you every Saturday from 11 to 12 on the Tampa St. Pete Sports Connection.
WTAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.